that's your greatest source of creativity. Like, if you can learn to have a conversation with the person you were before the world told you, we don't want that person, that's the most creative person you know.
Hi, my name is Sarah Panous. I've spent the last 2 decades driving digital content for billion-dollar brands. Now I help content marketers build winning brand storytelling strategies and reduce feelings of overwhelm and confusion. Join me as we discuss strategy, creativity, confidence, and building a better connection with your audience. Think of this as a creative content marketing jam session mixed with chicken soup for the soul. This is the Marketing with Empathy podcast. Hey, hey, Kindred speakers, welcome back. Today, I'm really excited about the guest I have on. I first heard CJ Cassiata speak at the Story Conference in Nashville a few years ago, and it was there that I was introduced as well to his book called Get Weird, Discover the Surprising Secret to Making a Difference. Well, I'm super thrilled because today we get to speak with CJ. We get to speak with the author and expert himself to hear how being weird applies to business, your career, and your life, and how the heck do we find the weird in all of us? So for everyone listening, I recorded a short review of CJ's book in episode 54 here on the Marketing with Empathy podcast. In it, I toplined some of CJ's advice with a strong recommendation to read the book yourself. It is so good. Today, since I have the honor of speaking directly with CJ, the author, we're going to go deeper into his experiences with brands, the people who've embraced their weird, to see and unpack like how it helped drive business results. So if you're enjoying today's topic, after you listen, make sure you hop on over and listen to episode 54 afterward. But don't go anywhere because we got to hear this conversation first. So before I dig in, though, who the heck is CJ Cassiata? So let me tell you a little bit more about his background. CJ runs a messaging and production studio called Reculture, where he brings more than a decade of experience as a results-driven creative strategist and producer. Seen by many as a trusted voice on 21st century cultural shifts, he's consulted and developed campaigns for presidential candidates, IPOs, startups, and Fortune 500s, partnering with some notable brands you've likely heard of, including MGM Studios, Delta Airlines, Sesame Street, Lululemon, and the United Nations Foundation. An accomplished media producer, he's collaborated on projects with leading culture makers like Ira Glass of This American Life, Seth Godin, and Food Network's Manit Chauhan. A sought-after communicator and TEDx alumnus, he's traveled globally speaking to creative professionals at venues like Creative Mornings, Charity Water, and Story, which is the conference that I saw him at. In addition, CJ's work has been featured by Forbes, Salon, CBS, MTV, and TechCrunch. And as I mentioned, he is the author of the book, Get Weird, Discover the Surprising Secret to Making a Difference, which we're going to dig into more today. Also, for anyone listening, CJ is living in the midst of a renovation right now. So if we hear any background noise, that's why. This is life. It's all good. But I just wanted to call that out in case you're like, what is that sound? What is that? So welcome to the show, CJ.
Thank you. Thanks, Sarah, for having me.
Absolutely. Well, first, I just want to say how honored I am to have you on the show. I literally am not lying at all, and I'm not just blowing steam up you, but I absolutely adore your book. It is so well written. You are like a very, very talented writer.
I really appreciate that. You know, it's cool that it has found its people, you know? That's been the most interesting part about like writing a book for the first time. It's found its weirdos. And I mean that as you know from reading the book as a compliment.
Absolutely. So, you know, before we begin, I just want to let me just do like a quick setup of the book and what Get Weird is all about based on how you describe it. And then we'll get into all my questions I have for you and how you wrote this and what the reaction has been like. So the quick summary, you know, is Get Weird is really this manifesto about like the weird wild kid still inside us begging to make the difference they were born to before the world told them to sit down, shut up, and fit in or else. It's a permission slip to quit checking off boxes, painting by numbers, and conforming to patterns with strong evidence for why we can't wait any longer to do so. And I want to read one of the reviews you got CJ, because it's so great. I have the book here in front of me. And this review is from Brad Montague. He is the writer, director, and creator of Kid President, someone else I met at the Story Conference. Love his work as well. And he says, this little book will brighten bookshelves and the world, because that's what weird things do. Whip smart and full of heart, it is a needed wake-up call, an inspiring invitation to be unusual, because this world can't handle any more business as usual. CJ's mind operates in a wonderfully weird way, and here he's gracious enough to let us in on the fun. It reads like a manifesto from a friend who believes in you. That's because CJ really does care. I can't wait to see all the goodness that's unleashed in the world because of this weird and wonderful book. So what a great, and you have so many of these amazing testimonials, but it really is. It's such a very well-written book. And I feel like for me, it just really spoke to my spirit, you know, as a creative person. And I know it's going to help my audience of marketing professionals listening right now, because it's so imperative for us as people, but then also in our careers and for our businesses and all the things we think about. So that's what I want to talk about, CJ. We're going to get into that and your experiences. Since I've already done a review of the book overall, this is where we can get really deep, and I'm excited about this.
I love it.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so my first question for you is, what's the reaction been to asking people and companies to embrace their weird?
Yeah, you know, it's been a lot more positive than I thought. When I first wrote the book, I was a little bit nervous that that word weird would sort of garner, you know, feelings of awkwardness and you know, thoughts of like, I don't want to really, you know, even step into that reality. But what I found is that most people and most companies alike sort of already know deep inside that they are weird, and they're sort of waiting for somebody to excavate that from them. And so it's been like, yes, we've been waiting for somebody to give us permission to do this. Now let's figure out how to articulate that well.
So that's great news. Has anything surprised you then about input or insights that you've gotten from speaking about this topic?
I think what's been most surprising is the amount of people who come up to me and say, hey, how do I parent my kids, or how do I talk to my students, or how do I sort of help the next generation live into this reality? And they have such earnest sort of eyes when they ask that. It puts me on the spot a little bit to go like, I'm trying to figure that out too as a parent and as, you know, an educator. But that is really the question that seems to be on most people's mind, whether it's in a corporate setting or whether I'm talking to a bunch of folks, you know, after a conference or, you know, a virtual gathering. That seems to be a major question that comes up.
Yeah, it's like you turn into a bit of a parenting expert, and that does put you
right,
on
which
the
I'm not.
Right? You're like, I'm figuring this out too.
Take one look at my kids; they're amazing, but they'll let you know I'm not a parenting expert.
I can see that being a question though, because as you talk through the book, you're talking, you know, about us and what we used to be like as kids and how we embrace that inner child. So it is natural to think, well, how do we kind of stop that cycle and get our kids now to not grow up to be like a lot of us as adults, where we've lost that and we feel like we have to conform and fit in. So that definitely does make sense that would be a question for you. What do you say? What's a takeaway of like, how do we help channel that into our kids now?
Well, I'm learning that sort of in real time with my own kids. And what I say is, you know, can we start to do just two simple things in our schools, in our parenting? And that's, one, can we help kids believe in themselves? And two, can we help them believe in others? I think sometimes we really complicate it. We, you know, try and make all of these sort of excuses for why this thing can't happen or this thing can't happen. But if we really just start to, and speaking of Brad, I mean, he who gave such a nice testimonial to the book. I mean, he says, you know, something like be the grown up you wish you had when you were a kid. You know, so can we
be those
kinds of people who help kids believe in themselves? Which, you know, I think we've done. I mean, as someone who sort of sits on the cusp of like Gen X and millennials, I feel like our generation, our parents, for the most part, did a really good job of helping us believe in ourselves, right? And you know, calling us special and all of that stuff. In addition, though, I think if we can help kids believe that those around them who may be different than them, who maybe think different, look different, act different, help them believe in those kids as well. I think if we just solve those two problems, helping kids believe in themselves and others, we're going to see over the course of maybe just a couple of years, one generation, things dramatically change for the better.
So in chapter 6 of the book, you talk about the myth of the caterpillar. And this is something I personally heard you speak about at the story conference in Nashville that we both attended. And it was such a powerful visual that I've actually repeated it to my kids several times, because it really makes a lot of sense. So tell us more about the myth of the caterpillar and how it was kind of an epiphany moment for you.
Yeah, well, I think we live in a culture of myths that we've sort of just accepted as realities over the course of our lives. And Western culture is really, really good at this. I mean, we can talk about historical myths. We could talk about myths that have sort of gotten us into culture wars and a lot of the trouble that we find ourselves in a really polarized environment right now. But I'm going to go all the way back to myths that we start learning as a kid. And one of the myths that I know I learned was this myth of, you know, the ugly caterpillar turning into a beautiful butterfly, or the ugly duckling turning into, you know, this beautiful swan, that there sort of had to be this transformation that needed to happen in order for the crowd, in order for the audience, in order for our peer group to accept us. And I kind of woke up one day. I also likened it to Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer, that original, you know, 1960s yes. claymation story, where it's like, okay, you've got to show us some giant reason for the thing that makes you weird, the thing that makes you different. In Rudolph's case, a shiny red nose. You got to show us why we should accept this. This has to have some sort of empirical value that we can measure in order for you to mm-hmm. be accepted into society. And maybe I'm just crazy, and maybe this is part of my weirdness that I just think about these things, you know, far too deeply and long and analytically. But I just think giving our kids that message over and over and over again, over time, that's going to have an effect. And I realized that I had that message sort of, you know, again, not innocuously, like it wasn't on purpose or to be detrimental or anything, but that message has just sort of been given to, you know, me as a kid for so long that I eventually became an adult, and that permeated sort of my thought process as to how I enter into society and how I enter into the workforce. And I think a much better message is to sort of understand that it's so false in many ways. And what happened with the whole myth of the caterpillar, if you read the chapter, is I was writing this book on my friend's farm, and she showed me this caterpillar, and I'm like, this is a really good looking creature right here. It had, you know, green speckles and bright yellow and jet black sort of adornments on it. And I'm like, This is not a feel good sort of moment here. It was sort of a moment where I felt like I'd been duped, because I was conditioned to understand caterpillars as ugly, and they're not. I mean, some of them I guess maybe are, but
yeah.
I think digging past some of these cultural myths will really, you know, start to help our kids and us. We can even start to, I mean, part of this book was sort of my own kind of unwinding of, you know, my perceived notions around weirdness and normality. But I believe, you know, as we start to unpack those again, we're going to start to see a lot of things change for the better.
Mm-hmm. And the big thing, like with that caterpillar, because when you saw it and how beautiful it was with all those adornments, you were like, this caterpillar is beautiful and wonderful as it is. It doesn't have to wait to transform into a butterfly. And I remember when you said that, when I had heard you speak about it, and then when I read it in your book too, I was like, yeah, I mean, there's so many different transformation stories that we hear throughout life. And sometimes we wait and we think we have to wait or we have to change to become those things. But it was such a powerful visual to show being okay and being embracing like you as you are now and what makes you different, because that is beautiful and great and good in that time too.
Well, and we can talk about this more in a little bit, but I think there's a cultural shift happening right now where people are sort of waking up to the outdatedness of these traditional stories, the hero's journey, right? I mean, and I'm not knocking the hero's journey, obviously, like Joseph Campbell had some great ideas that stand the test of time, but we're also sort of entering into a more evolved type of society where everybody's individuality and everybody's uniqueness and everybody's weirdness, so to speak, together sort of creates a new narrative. And my friend Jeff Gomez talks a lot about this. Over the hero's journey, we're starting to look at something called the collective journey right now. If you start looking at different forms of storytelling and films and television shows and even, you know, in advertising and branding, the idea that all of our sort of unique, weird attributes combined together, tackling a problem, solving an issue, overcoming something, that seems to speak way more clearly and articulately to reality, or to at least our reality right now, than sort of this classic, you know, usually male macho, you know, having the guy, like, you know, having to sword fight a dragon, or, you know, somebody dressed in black in order to save the princess, right? I mean, these stories are becoming outdated. And so what's it going to be replaced by? And I think what we're starting to see is sort of the era of the misfits banding together, the collective weirdos banding together to overcome some of these age-old notions.
Yeah.
I'm trying to say there's a meta conversation happening, you know?
Definitely. Definitely. And I think what's so great about how you entered into that conversation with your Get Weird book too, is it really flips the notion of, like, the definition of the word weird, and that weird isn't a bad thing at all. Like, we want to be a bunch of weirdos. Weirdos is what makes a difference. Weirdos is what makes us stand out. So for me, like, you personally completely changed how I define weird and how I talk about it to my kids. And now when my kids tell me I'm weird, I always say, thank you. Like, thank you. I appreciate that. That's a compliment. So it's
that,
just good.
That is fantastic. That makes my day.
Yeah. No, you truly have. You've totally changed what that definition is for me and how I'm teaching that to my kids too. Well, so, you know, since my audience is a bunch of marketing professionals that are listening right now, we can talk about weird, but in our careers, obviously, we have to tie it to some results too, right? For our bosses and for the people we report into. So I would love to get your help on connecting the dots for how being weird actually helps drive business results or helps someone advance in their career and in their life by digging into some of, like, actual brand examples that you to illustrate a few different scenarios. And I know when we had chatted before, you have a few different scenarios that I think are great because they cover a multitude of different aspects that people listening right now may relate to or be like, yep, that's my company. That's what it's like. So I'd love to just unpack these three with you. So first, tell us about, I know you have a brand that did two different ordinary things, but when they were combined, the combination of those two ordinary things made them weird, and they just needed to be able to explain it. So tell us more about that brand example.
Yeah. So I go around, my bread and butter is doing messaging and production work for, you know, different companies. So we'll, you know, do a workshop that we call Weird Thinking with them to really excavate, like I said in the beginning, their weirdness. And then usually we'll end up producing, you know, content and you know, different forms of sort of that expression, whether it be, you know, podcast series, you know, original video presentations, sometimes even internal brand activation stuff. So there's one company that we're talking about. I found that there's usually three or four different kinds of companies, and, you know, they're either companies that need to find their weirdness but are already sort of doing strange things and just sort of need to articulate it. Then there are companies who they're doing two sort of ordinary things, two things that are very sort of run of the mill, but they haven't realized that the fact that they do both of those things makes them interesting, makes them weird. Mm-hmm. And then there's that last kind of company, which they're just sort of they're doing a couple of different weird things, but they really need to make a choice over which weird thing they're going to do so that people understand it. They're like, they're too weird for their own good. So the company I want to focus on or tell a story of is really that second company where they were doing two different ordinary things and combined it sort of made them weird. They just need to figure out how to explain it. So this was a Denver innovation firm. They were a management consultancy doing innovation, but they're from Denver. They're from Colorado. So Colorado, the whole vibe of Colorado was sort of just like in their bloodstream. They felt really compelled to do a lot of corporate social responsibility work and to really help companies and their clients sort of innovate from a sustainability perspective. But they were just really good business consultants, management consultants. And so they were doing these two different things. They couldn't figure out, hey, are we an innovation company that also does some sustainability work? Are we a sustainability company that also does some innovation work? So what we focused most of our time on was sort of drilling down how to articulate that you would want to bring this company in if you wanted to innovate because they had this extra sort of competitive edge where they saw things through a Colorado lens, a sustainable lens. And that was, you know, easier said than done. But that is what we had to drill down is you actually do these two different things and you need to figure out how to present those two different things in a way that not only makes you weird, but makes it easy for other people to understand why that weirdness matters to them as a client, as a customer.
Got it. That makes sense. And then another brand example, you talked about like if you're doing like two weird things and you need to make a choice between them because it's confusing people. Like, can you give us an example of that?
Yeah. So there was a relief organization in the Middle East that I worked with, and they had really great programs that they were running. But because, and a lot of people, I mean, you're an entrepreneur, so you know this, the way you start off and start out rarely becomes what you are known for. You know, you take so many, people think success is sort of like this, you know, this linear sort of trajectory. And in reality, you know, there's twists and turns and discoveries and pivots. And so this organization had pivoted a lot. And so they started out doing a lot of this medical sort of relief work in other parts of the world. And that was sort of, that sort of gave them their start. But the core sort of founding team got noticed and really ended up loving discussing relief work in high conflict sort of zones. And so I remember our conversation was around, well, shoot, which one are we going to platform? Which one are we going to message? And what we discovered out of that was, we can still do all of this, you know, medical work in the background, and that can, you know, provide us with, you know, the way they had kind of set up their business model was that was helping them sort of sustain, you know, their growth. But we can spend this season where we actually have that sustainable growth due to that medical that medical program. We can now start to go, okay, we're gonna focus 95%, if not more, of our messaging around where we want to go. And where we want to go is the thing that we feel makes us weird, makes us unique, is we want to be experts in high conflict areas and bringing relief to those high conflict areas. And again, as an outsider who, you know, sort of has been writing about weirdness and differentiation, that made really clear sense to me. But imagine just, you know, traveling over to the Middle East and getting all these board members together, and nobody could really quite figure out how to articulate that. And so that was sort of the big aha moment from that, working with that company, working with that brand, was do we have permission to go somewhere that feels a little bit outside of what we've normally been doing, even if we're maybe not quite experts in that yet, but we want to go there. And what's interesting is once they sort of made the decision and stopped trying to be everything to all people and start, you know, messaging all of these different programs they did and just focused on the one message that they really wanted to go after, they, I think like quadrupled in donations and in really their growth over the next like 5 months.
Oh, that's great. And then you had mentioned then, so what about like the company that is just inherently weird, but they just need help explaining it? They don't have like multiple things. They don't have two ordinary things. They're just weird. Like how, what's an example of that?
Well, those are really fun. I mean, they're all fun kind of companies, but the kinds of companies that, are somewhat, sometimes the most challenging to work with, but they're really the most fun to is they're already doing such inherently weird thing, but they kind of wear that as a badge of honor. I'm probably like this to other people, or you know, to consultants and stuff. Like it's like, hey, don't tell me how to simplify my message. Don't tell me how to articulate what makes me weird. I just kind of want to be in my own little weird. So I talk about my friend Brandon in the book, who started the David Harp Foundation, who it's a nonprofit that is out of East San Diego that trains kids how to use production equipment and become producers and audio engineers and musicians. Who, and these kids are part of families who are struggling with housing insecurities. They're in low income neighborhoods. So it all started with Brandon essentially, you know, working as a producer outside of his, you know, in his home, in his garage, and kids on the street coming up to him and going, oh, I want to do this. I want to, you know, I want to help you out. And he kind of bugging him. And so he was like, hey, why don't you bring me some good grades tomorrow? So get your grades up and I'll give you an hour of studio time. And that turned into this really amazing nonprofit that continues to do a bunch of work today. And so I remember we worked together and they were just having trouble articulating all of the interesting stuff that they were doing and had to kind of simplify it. So I remember we came up with a tagline for them, and I have a mug at home that says it. It's you know, David's Harp Foundation, statistics defied by songs, because that's all they do all day long, is just produce songs. And you know, these kids, so, and they're helping to sort of change the trajectory of these kids' lives in San Diego, these, you know, that otherwise would be statistics.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Those are three really great examples for people listening to think about. So I invite you all listening, where do you fall in that mix? You know, how do you feel about your organization or even about yourself and your own personal brand? So stick around. We're going to take a quick commercial break and CJ and I will continue the conversation. Get ready to create a rockstar content team at your corporation. Today's episode of Marketing with Empathy is brought to you by my Brand Storytelling Academy. Brand Storytelling Academy is an intimate 5-month group training program designed to help internal B2C and nonprofit teams attract top funnel leads to drive bottom funnel results. For 1/3 of the cost to hire a person on the team or onboard a high-level storytelling strategist, up to 5 people on your team can be developing and accelerating their brand storytelling skills. Learn to humanize your brand to connect with your audience. Develop confidence in brand storytelling skills, frameworks, and strategic mindset needed to advance in your career and enjoy your job more. 7x new and repeat engagement through empathy plus data-driven storytelling. And improve your existing team's strategic skills without having to hire more people. Think of it like a college certification program for your team, but you get the knowledge a lot quicker, and your professor, me, has 20 years of hands-on experience in the field. In addition to hearing from me, I'll have guest experts join, and each week you'll also connect and learn from other brand marketing professionals in the group. Curious? Fill out the application at kindredspeak.com/apply to learn more, and I'll be in touch to discuss if it's a good fit for your organization. Go to kindredspeak.com/apply. Okay, so CJ, we know it matters. We know being weird helps make a difference. What steps can my listeners take to put this into action for themselves? Like, how do you figure out your weird factor?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit different for, you know, for everyone. But if we're talking on an individual, well, I think it'd be good to sort of differentiate between like on an individual level or like for their company or for their project. Like, which one do we want to tackle first?
Sure, let's tackle for your company first.
Okay, so for companies, I think the easiest thing to do is to look at your people. I mean, a lot of us, especially in the West, you know, seem to believe that, you know, these companies are sort of this disembodied, sort of disassociated things that we go and work for. But really, you know, a company, an organization is an organism that's made up of many, many living things, many, many, many different people who all bring their own uniqueness to the table. And I think so often we tend to kind of just glaze over that and try and find our point of differentiation and our point of, you know, unicorn technology or whatever, you know, we have to sort of tout out there somewhere, you know, on a hill. You know, again, it goes back to that hero's journey, but really looking within at our people and capitalizing on the unique team that we've created over time. And it's a really special thing.
What do you look for then within your people to help you get to like what makes us weird? Are you looking for trends and themes and feedback?
Yeah, I think asking questions too and being curious and being empathetic with your people, you'd be surprised at the kind of invention and the kind of innovation that starts with just simply listening, just and being empathetic towards people and really getting to know who they are and what makes them tick. Lots of times we just sort of, especially, oh my gosh, with everything being virtual right now, I mean, Zoom and video chat, it's made this even harder, right? Because we kind of just want to get to the point and make this as efficient as possible and go back to doing what we've, you know, been doing. But to take that extra moment to curate everybody's individuality, everybody's weirdness in our team, and to be able to archive that, to be able to sort of know that about each other and about the team that we're doing this thing together with, it might be hard to measure, but I would say it's invaluable.
And I know you mentioned before that you do weird thinking workshops. Can you do those remotely with companies, or is that more an in-person exercise?
No, I've done it remotely, and it's always better, right, in person, just because, you know, we can sort of understand body language more and you know, all of those unseen things, but and nuanced things, I should say. But we can do them virtually, and we're adapting just like everybody else.
Yeah. No, that's great to hear. Okay, so then that's like some ideas on the corporate side. Then on the company side, how do you figure out your weird factor for yourself?
Well, yeah, again, I think it's sort of realizing what narratives have you sort of just accepted over time, maybe even since you were a kid, that if you dig a little deeper, realize aren't true. I mean, this gets a little bit into psychology, and I'm not a psychologist, but it's like, what stories aren't serving you anymore, you know? And then working backwards from there, I mean, a lot of times the things that we believe about ourselves that aren't serving us start with somebody who kicked our uniqueness out of us, often at an early age. That could be a parent, that could be a coach, that could be a friend, that could be anybody in your peer group. But it usually starts from an early age. And so really trying to get to know that child, that 6-year-old, that 7-year-old, that 8-year-old, whoever you were before that point, that's a conversation worth having.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that just takes that self-work then to really ask yourself those questions, journal on it, think about it, to get to the root of that, doesn't it?
Well, and often you'll find that's to kind of bring it back into sort of the corporate, you know, world, it's like that's your greatest source of creativity. If you can learn to have a conversation with the person you were before the world told you we don't want that person, that's the most creative person you know. That's the most uninhibited person you know. That's the most free-spirited and innovative person you know, because they weren't told no.
I love that. Who listening doesn't want to get to their most creative person that they are? That is beautiful. But so, okay, so then I have a follow-up question, and that's a little bit deeper. And I know neither one of us are psychologists or anything. So I have an observation that I've personally been struggling with, and I'm just curious to hear what you think, given your expertise in this topic. like in our current culture, it feels like we're kind of living in constant contradictions when it comes to embracing our weird. Because from my observation, like what I see on one hand is we have a lot more acceptance of people and things and ideas that are different. But on the other hand, I also see a lot of divisive actions and attitudes towards people who think differently than us. So how do people retain the courage to be weird, like to be themselves, when they know that others might not agree with them?
Well, I think it's a conversation about definitions and about language. I think we've confused over the past several years, at least, the word identity with the word story. I think we love the word story so much, and we're talking about creativity and marketing and branding and all of that kind of stuff. And so we live in the realm of story, and I'm not trying to knock story, but I think when we start seeing ourselves and others merely as a collection of stories, and we don't value the underlying uniqueness, what I would call identity. I think identity is something that can't be taken from you. It's who you are before the world told you who you were, before the world told you a story about you. I'm not saying stories aren't important. I'm saying there's something more important than stories. And so when we reduce everyone to a story, when we reduce our own self to a story, oh, I like this, I do this, this is who I want to be seen as, this is what how I want to be seen, this is who I want to identify with, this is who I want to be like, this is who that other person is like, this is what that other person thinks, this is what that other person doesn't think, this is where I disagree with that other person. When we focus so much on these sort of narratives that we've kind of placed around ourselves without first seeing the incredible miracle of unique life in each other and the fact that nobody can take that away, we start to have the problems that we're having. And I think social media and a lot of the mechanisms that we have sort of created help to kind of put that space between us. It makes it easier to reduce someone to a set of 140 characters. Well, I guess it's now 280 characters, or a square image with a little caption on it, right? It's easier to reduce a person with simply a piece of content, a story, and they're not that. They're an individual, unique, miraculous, statistic odd defying collection of consciousness that coexists in the same sphere that you do.
Yeah. I keep going back when I think about it is I just always keep thinking as you're talking about just it's the golden rule. Like put yourself in someone else's shoes. We all are individuals. We all, like you're just talking about, we're all individually uniquely made. And what is that? And just remembering the humanness, which is why I love a lot of like, I do love how storytelling, it can help humanize brands, like to better connect and engage their audiences. But like as professionals and as people, we just need to remember what you just said. I think that's really important.
Well, thanks. I've just been thinking a lot about it lately. It's like, what story are you telling? Anybody can tell a story, but unless we're asking some really pointed follow-up questions, we've only done a little bit of the work, and maybe we've even done a disservice in the first place.
Yeah. By focusing and fixating. Sometimes I think like we just focus on the wrong things. You know, we get so fixated on materialistic or otherwise things, and then you just kind of lose that sight of your identity. I like how you defined that. Okay. So then as we wrap up, what's one takeaway that you want to leave my listeners with before we end the show today?
Create out of the self that you used to be before the world told you you probably shouldn't.
I love that. And, you know, if you're listening and you're like me and this resonated with you, I definitely recommend read his book. It is so good. CJ, your book is so good. And again, it's called Get Weird, Discover the Surprising Secret to Making a Difference. I'll put a link to it in the show notes as well. So you can just click and buy. But Otherwise, just Google it and go online and order it. It's a great read. So CJ, like, how can people connect with you online? Where else can they find you?
Yeah, I'm pretty much off social media for some of the reasons we talked about earlier, but I do have a LinkedIn. So just find me on LinkedIn. And my studio is called Reculture. So if you just Google Reculture, it'll show up. It's Reculture. It's reculture.re. And you can find me there.
Beautiful. I'll link to that as well. Thank you so much. That wraps up today's episode. I hope you guys are going to get your weirdo on. You're going to think about where you fall on the spectrum within your company, within yourself, and really being the creative self that you used to be, channeling and working to get towards that as best as you can. That is beautiful. So thank you so much, CJ, for coming on today. This was great.
Hey, thanks, Sarah. You're doing some really great work and I appreciate the conversation.
Likewise. Thank you. Okay, folks, chime in next week. Oh, make sure you, if you like this, head over to episode 54. You can listen to more about the book and the recap there. Otherwise, we'll speak to you next week. Until next time, Kindred Speakers. High fives for finishing another episode. When faced with an obstacle, you're the type of person who gets better instead of bitter. I hope you feel creatively inspired and invite you to check back often for more goodness from me and my guest. If you want more actionable advice and inspiration, head over to kindredspeak.com for show notes, all discount codes from today's episode, and to sign up for my newsletter. Subscribe now to the Marketing with Empathy podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcast. And if you'd be so kind, will you please leave me a review? This helps my podcast get noticed by others. Keep smiling.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Heiler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.